Ancient Faith Radio now presents Approaching the Wardrobe with Jeff Wisniewski. Here, Orthodox Christians will come to better understand and relate to the not-yet-Orthodox. And the not-yet-Orthodox will find comfort and insights that will encourage them to finally and fully embrace the ancient Christian faith. Here's Jeff with today's broadcast.
And welcome back to Approaching the Wardrobe, Understanding the Journey Toward Orthodoxy and Those Who Are on It. And sometimes the journey bleeds right into aspects of Orthodoxy that I've still found myself wrestling with, even after all these years of wrestling with the same issue. Today's topic is, simply put, people. One simple word, people. And it's one of those things like, it's almost so simple that you could also spend a lifetime exploring the concept and the dynamics of people. It's kind of like the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept, and how it sounds so simple. And of course, you can memorize it instantly. But in reality, you could contemplate Jesus wept and the dynamics going on there for your entire life and still not scratch the surface of it. The concept of people in the Eastern Orthodox mind, as you've surely heard, is that other people are not separate from ourselves. Other people, including all of humanity, are somehow united to us, and we somehow are the same, and we bear their sins and their burdens as well as our own. And it's all one big hodgepodge, so to speak, of humanity, and we're all united. And I've only started not only contemplating this, but trying to act on this. I've only started cracking the window on this whole concept, so to speak, when I finally entered Eastern Orthodoxy. And I started viewing people a little bit at a time, small moments throughout this experience. Have I even touched on this concept? So I don't mean to be any kind of knowledgeable person on the concept at all. In fact, I'm probably one of the least knowledgeable people because I've come from a very individualistic life and a Christian world that's very individualistic. Even though you're very busy with other people all the time, doing all kinds of things for people and with people, when it comes down to it, people are utilized by you. Even if you are joining with them in worship, classes, in service to others, the Western mindset, at least the modern Western mindset, has people as being utilized by you for your own feeling good or your own impartation of ministry or knowledge or giftedness that you are somehow blessing people with. I don't mean to sound too harsh here, but I'm really thinking about myself. I've actually pulled myself away from certain ministries and even positions at times, probably at least two times, a major full-time position, because I sensed, and it was nagging at my soul, that I was purely doing this for my own ego. Just this morning, I was out at a lake fishing for trout, which I often do. I love the peacefulness of the water and the mystery of what might be lurking under the water and what might be going for your bait, not to mention the actual thrill of the hunt or thrill of the chase that most guys seem to love more than the actual attainment of it. And I also take this time to listen to things to try to get myself inspired and prayerful, a lot of podcasts, which I'm thankful for. But anyways, here I was out at the lake, and when a thought came up from Father Gabriel Rochelle in the middle of one of his podcast, the thought came up that we are united with other human beings. He didn't delve into it much, but he mentioned it. I started thinking about this, that we are united with other human beings. And I was starting to get a little uncomfortable physically and wanted to go home. So I wrapped up my gear and started walking along the lake shore back towards where I was fishing a few minutes earlier and had caught a trout instantly. I had walked down to where this man was sitting with his bicycle over the water, and he was looking at the water or ducks or whatever, listening to something on some headphones. And there was about a 12-foot space next to him where I could kind of sneak in next to some reeds. And I knew there were some fish over there at times, because last time no one else was catching anything at this lake, I went over there and casted way out with a special lure I have and nabbed a couple nice trout. And so I kind of wander down near him, move over a little bit, and I carefully cast it out to the area I wanted to fish at, and either on my first or second cast, wham, I hit a nice trout. I reel it in, he's splashing around, And the guy's like, whoa, nice, nice job. Makes a couple comments and asks me if I catch much out here. What am I using? Blah, blah, blah. I tell him a couple things. There's an interesting dynamic when fishing, at least with guys. I'm not sure what it is, but it's almost a competitive spirit to where you don't want to tell too much to somebody else. You don't want to give away any secrets. If you can hide it when you catch a fish, you actually can do that just to keep other people from coming over and trying to fish too close to you when you just want to be alone. Well, a little later, I'm fishing around and I get a little uncomfortable and want to go home. And here I am with one nice trout on a stringer. And so I'm at another spot at this point, but I wander back and I see this guy actually was fishing just a touch over from where I was now. And earlier I didn't see that he had been wanting to fish or had a fishing pole or anything. So I felt kind of awkward, like, oh, great. Here I am. I walk up on a guy who was standing there looking at the water. I cast. I catch a nice trout. That's the only trout anyone had caught this whole morning that I could tell. And then he kind of moves over a few minutes later. And then later I realized he moved over and started fishing. So I was like, darn it. And I had just heard the thought that we are united with other humans. I had this conflict of motive going on because some people don't like to actually clean the fish. They just like catching them. And that's me. I love catching the fish. I grew up cleaning walleye and things up in Minnesota, and my grandma or grandpa would do it, or actually have a person do it for us out at a major lake if we were on a big walleye fishing excursion. So the cleaning is not the fun part. You pull out all the guts and stuff out of the fish, and then ideally you chill it, you keep it chilled, and that day you grill them and eat the fish, and they taste the best that way, especially if you can grill them. But when you're the one that caught them and then gutted them and stuff, you really kind of lose your appetite for the fish. At least I do. I always pass it on to my wife, who loves those fish. And so here I am, having just had this thought about how we are really part of other people and united to other people. And I didn't want to clean this fish. So I walk over to this guy and I was like, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were fishing, and I did apologize. And I was like, do you have a stringer or something? Because I have a trout here. I don't really want to keep them, and I thought you might want to have them. This was a nice gesture. The funny thing is, when I offered him the trout and gave it to him, I was acting like I was just being nice. Yeah, I mentioned I didn't want to clean it. But it was almost like I was doing a good deed just to make myself feel good, when in reality I just didn't want to clean the trout. Which probably means in the end I have no heavenly rewards for this activity at all. So this kind of ties into Christianity in a sense. It reminds me that there's always this strange mixture of motives every time we are interacting with other people. The terror of it is that when you look at those motives too much, I'm not sure we're supposed to too much, but when we do, we can catch a glimpse of the selfishness and the lack of real love that's going on in that interaction. A large part of my life doing good things can almost be summed up with those same motives, the same conflict of interest that I would pretty much keep hidden. Now, in Orthodoxy, or at least real pure Orthodoxy, you can't really keep things hidden. They're not meant to be hidden. Everything is out on the table. There's always a flag thrown, so to speak, when you are in some kind of sin, even in your heart.
I had a big idea. I had a crazy eye. I broke the sacred seal. I told a lazy I've had my conscience bent, I've had my patience tried. I've been up in the desert and down by the riverside. Will the eagle fly if the sky's untrue? Do the faithful sigh? Remember when I cried, remember when you knew, remember the look in your eyes, I know I do. And count the stars to measure time, the earth is hard, the treasure fine. see, I'll crawl on my knee.
It's very hard to live honestly as a believer in Christian service when you have an annoying sense inside of you that you don't really love the people you're trying to serve, and you realize that you are actually not serving the people most of the time from your heart. You are using them to impress yourself or to get others to like you, and it's almost like they're a mirror on the wall, and you're looking in the mirror and saying, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? Please let it be me. You don't consciously think this way, but why else do you try to play on people's emotions when you're giving a sermon? Well, you may at the time think that it's just trying to inspire people, but then why does it feel so good later when they're telling you nice things in the hallway all week long? Maybe things come up and it strokes your ego. I think of the Orthodox father, a story I heard, who, when he was complimented on something, some teaching he gave or whatever, I can't remember, he responded, "Thank you, Satan already told me that." I think that's from one of a word from the Holy Father's readings, which I appreciate immensely. The concept is, when we are giving and serving with one hand, it's supposed to be secret almost, and not letting our right hand know what our left hand is doing. If we take that to a social level, we should be doing less things that are impressing people and more things that are really helping people. And it's easy to say that, but here's what's really going on. If we start from the premise that we are what's important as far as our own spirituality, we are what we're supposed to be focused on, we are who are supposed to be inspired, we are the ones trying to improve our walk with God. If we start with this premise, which is a very Western Christian premise, then everything we do obviously is going to follow those same lines. Now, if we start from a premise in our heart where that person is actually me, then everything they're feeling or experiencing or needing is what we are wanting and needing for them, then we can actually love and do something useful for them. And I may be a little too bold here in saying that that's the only time when we really get a reward from God later. Our Heavenly Father will reward us when we do things in secret, as Christ says in the Sermon on the Mount. I may be stretching things a little too much there, but that may be the case. Those are the things that are going to last, the things we build with that come out of a loving your neighbor as yourself concept, something I've barely touched on. My wife has probably spent decades actually loving people this way. Her ability to empathize with people and really serve them according to their needs is something I would love to have. I think I've probably only tasted of that a few times in my entire life. Now, once I remember getting my ego stroked a little bit from a newspaper article in the Tampa Bay Times, where a thing we were pulling off through my activities as a youth minister was this thing called Skate Church, which had started probably back in the late 90s in California, I think. But here I was out in Florida putting together this local skate church thing in a downtown older county seat. This local guy who was an editor, semi-retired editor for the Tampa Bay newspaper, I think, did an article on us, came and interviewed people, some of the kids off the street and stuff about this skate church thing. And it mentioned me in there and stuff. And some of the quotes and things and from kids had to do with me. And the whole concept of that was to try and really impact and reach people with the gospel somehow who would never come by church at all, who would just think it was weird. So this whole ministry came out of a good desire. And I put a lot of sweat into that, even physically, just getting that whole ministry rolling and stuff, and took a lot of heat from church people. Which was fine. That kind of stroked my ego as well, like I was being on the edge and doing things with guts. And really, it was probably just a egotistical thing I was doing. But I did like to connect with people who wouldn't come to church at all and still try to bring some stories of Christ and the gospel to them and let them know that whatever happens in a year from now, if you don't know me or see me anymore, that God is there for you and that you can start this walk with Him if you haven't and have a relationship with Him no matter what's going on with others around you. Well, there's some truth to that, at least as a starting point. So I felt some kind of empathy and compassion for these kids. Some of them are similar to what I was like as a young person, not from any kind of church background or anything. The thing is, though, I would have this newspaper article. I still have it from the Tampa Bay newspaper that talked about me and blah, blah, blah. And I was so tempted to send it to people. I think I sent it to a couple people who knew me from the past, who I was a little more friends with. And then it felt weird afterwards. I was like, I was really just wanting to share with them, like we were having coffee and wanted to say something like, oh, get a kick out of this. But there was this tension there of, oh man, am I just trying to impress people with things I've done or accomplished? I think I kind of am, even though I kind of just want to share with them like something fun and good. So there's this, again, this mixed bag of motives, good desires, good things happening, and yet inside doing it almost for my own ego. And many, many people in a Christian world that doesn't have any built-in tempering of these passions, they are swimming against this current constantly. If you've ever swam against a current, it is so frustrating. You try to swim up a river because you lose your inner tube or something, or the wind is blowing one way and the current's going another way, and you try to get somewhere and you can't get anywhere, even though you're working your behind off. Well, that's kind of what it's like in a Christian world that feeds the ego or gives you all kinds of platforms for your own agenda and activities, your own spiritual good things. You've got a green light to do whatever you want. If you have a little personality or skills to make it happen, there you go. You get people to like you, want to follow you, want to be a part of what you're doing. That's two sides of a coin, a giftedness, and on the other side of that coin, a danger of treading on sacred ground that you really might not, you maybe shouldn't be treading at all when it comes to having a nice devotional service to God. So the Christian world in the West really feeds the out front, outgoing, the spotlight, so to speak, as we've talked on in a couple other of these podcasts. So what happens is you start longing for the ability to be a secret service agent, so to speak, a behind-the-scenes agent who is having a relationship with God and walking with God, serving God, without even being known, because that's a godly desire. That's where the rewards come in, of course, and that's where you start to taste of the Holy Spirit a little more. I've probably only done that a few times. I can't even remember. So maybe not at all. Who knows what I'll get in the end. But I know that God is just and fair, and he will reward the things done from at least a somewhat pure motive or a love for him or a response to him.
One more thing. Let's get together to fight this holy Armageddon.
One love.
So when the man comes, there will be no doom.
One song.
Have pity on those whose chances grow thin. There ain't no hiding place from the Father of creation. Say it. One love. What about the one?
One heart.
What about the
let's get together and feel all right.
I'm pleading to mankind.
One love.
One heart.
One heart. Give thanks and praise to the Lord,
and I will
feel all right.
In the midst of these things that sound really negative in the Christian world, there is beauty, there is fruitfulness that is genuine, that is done from a loving heart, that is rewarded by God, that is even sacred, if I'll be so bold to say, a sacred act of the Holy Spirit in the midst of our passions, our desires. The concept of passions I've been contemplating lately, and we're going to do a whole series on the passions, I think. But in general, it's these desires going on inside of us that are good and godly. Thank you, C.S. Lewis, for delving into these a lot and making me think about these things that are from God, that show that we have longings that cannot be fulfilled here, and that is evidence that we are made for another world, another kingdom, longings that cannot be fulfilled here that we find in us for something greater, for heaven, that's proof that there is another world, another realm, a heaven that we are somehow supposed to be connected to. This is the magic of the wardrobe, and we are approaching it. Thank you for joining me. We'll pick this up again in the next podcast.
You've been listening to Approaching the Wardrobe with Jeff Wisniewski. Jeff is a former Protestant youth minister and missionary. This podcast is a listener-supported presentation of Ancient Faith Radio on the web at ancientfaith.com.